Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Let's talk BEE or B triple, triple BEE, more than 30 years after the end of apartheid. Black economic empowerment remains one of the most contested policies in South Africa. Supporters argue it remains essential to correcting generations of economic exclusion and equality. Critics say it has too often benefited a politically connected elite while failing to actually create broad-based prosperity or meaningful job creation. Let's talk about what is happening in this space. Gabriel Krauss, writer and analyst for the Institute of Race Relations. A very, very good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. I hope you're well.
Yes, feeling much better. Thank you.
Great. So more than three decades after the introduction of democracy, triple BEE, has it achieved nothing, some part, or everything that it was meant to achieve? That's not multiple choice. Obviously, you can give us a sense.
I'll go for option B. I do think the right way to think about it is that in the 90s and 2000s, there was such an overwhelming dominance of white wealth, income, and managerial power that if white people wanted to, they could sort of implicitly coordinate in a way that would block black people from getting a fair share. And then you need to look within the white, and that's because white people had like 80% of the wealth, 70% of the income, 90% of the managerial jobs, over 95% actually in corporate South Africa. And then if you look at it, it's like, well, 2/3 of white people voted yes in the referendum to end apartheid and bring about all race democracy. But a third of white people voted no. And a lot of those white people were in government and had government roles where they could decide, you know, who is going to be the supplier of bitumen to pave the roads or who's going to get the construction job to build the new state building, the new fire station or whatever. So I think without some BEE, and clearly in the police, you know, everyone agreed, including the Constant Viljoen, the founder of the Freedom Front Plus. We need some affirmative action. And some of what it was needed to do has been done. So if you look in the public service, you have, you know, roughly speaking, 80% black managers in many organs of state, most organs of state. And if you look at public procurement, 70% of it, of the $900 billion going to the private sector every year, is going to majority black-owned companies. So that sort of grip that a minority of whites, not all whites, but some subsection of whites had on state power and the leverage that that had gave them, that's gone away. And that is a result of BEE. It's a good thing. On the other hand, black unemployment has doubled and the economy as a whole hasn't grown in real terms in since 2008, and that's not only bad for white people and poor black people, that's bad for middle class and rich black people too. Precisely the sort of nominal beneficiaries of BEE struggle to deepen their wealth stock, deepen their middle class experience, because we all share these problems of, you know, water shedding in Joburg, of a no growth economy, meaning that your savings are unlikely to have done super well in the stock exchange, meaning, you know, with the weakening of the rand, okay, it strengthened the last year, but over the last 20, it's weakened three times over. So if you want to have an overseas holiday, that's not looking so good for you. The cost of private schooling has increased radically, and that's partly a result of government schools being so weak. They, you know, we had the worst result out of 180 countries in 2019 in terms of literacy at grade five level. And then our results got even worse in the 2020s. So, yeah, partial success a long time ago, but overwhelmingly right now, I think it's holding us back. And we've got a lot of failures that are really holding us back very seriously.
Mm. So it's easy to say it, but the reality is, I wonder if it wouldn't have been different if the way to look at it was to say, right, there's 15 years or 20 years or 10 years of affirmative action, which was very, very clearly required and needed then. And this is what has to be achieved, but then it's over. Then yeah. Things carry on, and we've created the space for things to be rebalanced. Now we move forward. How long in a country like South Africa, where in fact there is the majority of the population is black, then, you know, surely this can't carry on forever. And as we've seen, it becomes very, very damaging at some point.
Yeah, I mean, Howard, can I zoom in on the legal sector code?
Yes,
because I think
yes,
it illustrates
please.
The point very
sure,
nicely.
Sure.
Because if you ask a government official, how long is this supposed to go on? Or if you look at the law, the BBBE Act, the Employment Equity Act, the legal sector, the act that presides over the requirements for law firms, which was challenged yesterday. There was a court hearing about it. All three of those, in fact, everything connected to BEE, one of the purposes defined by the law, meaning one of the goals once you've achieved, okay, we can drop it, is once there is equitable representation at all levels of the workforce, meaning you take, you know, if there were 100 people in a particular role at a company, then four of them should be white men, three of them should be white women, one of them should be an Indian man, maybe one or zero should be an Indian woman, eight should be colored women, nine should be colored men, 30 should be black women, and 45 should be black men. So those are the national average ratios of people, adults in the workforce, broken down by 8 race gender pairs. And once you have that at the C-suite level, and then separately at the middle management level, and then separately at the skilled workforce level, and then separately at the semi-skilled and unskilled workforce levels. You're supposed to have those ratios hit at every level, at every company in the country. Once that's been achieved, they say, then we can stop doing BEE. So that is a bit of a crazy goal for a couple of reasons, but the legal sector really spells out one of the reasons it's crazy. So there's some complaints, because if you look at the top management in the legal sector, that is, I don't know, roughly 50% white, and whites are only 87% of the population. So, you know, they're quote unquote overrepresented. But if you drill into the numbers, this is what you see. You see that the recently qualified lawyers are 85% black. Then if you look at lawyers that qualify, like lawyers in their 30s, they're sort of 70% black. If you look at lawyers in their 40s, they're about 50% black. If you look at lawyers in their 50s,
in other words, it's working.
Black.
In other words, it's worked.
So you see the population pyramid, and it's like, obviously, if you're looking at lawyers in their 60s, that's people who needed to have gone to school in 1970 and 1960. Like, that is people who were hit by the height of apartheid. Obviously, at that stage, whites are the vast majority. And when you're looking at top management, that's being pulled out of the people with the most experience. That's lawyers in their 60s. But if you're looking, if you look, as it were, if you play time forward by looking down the age pyramid of qualified lawyers, and the law is one of the few sectors where we have every attorney and every advocate's age is on the record. And
right,
so
it's all the data there.
This data. I subpoenaed this data. So we can see it, and we can see, but Howard, here's the thing. Is it BEE that's working? I say no. The way you look at those numbers, the change has happened exactly the way that, pretty much exactly the way you would predict it to happen, just by the demographics shifting from, like, you can be black and get a law degree, but it's very hard, to from the late 80s, early 90s, anyone can get a law degree, and schools are, like, supporting everyone. And over the next 25, 30 years, it just shifts to, like, now the new incoming lawyers are exactly the ratios of the country. There's pretty much exact, and no one is forcing that issue. It just has come about naturally. So the attempts to force the change at the top that have been ongoing haven't really succeeded. But the natural course of things has brought about the right results at the bottom of the age pyramid. And if you keep playing it forward, like if you look at middle management, it just maps exactly onto the racial breakdown of lawyers in their 50s. So, which is to say there's more middle managers that are black than are white.
Right.
So if you just play it in time, like demographics, I don't know, people talk about this around the world. Demographics are a law unto themselves. The law, it's very hard to try and shift the size of families, and it's very hard to try and shift the results of fundamental forces. And just like education from grade 1 to grade 12, what university degree are you getting? Like once 80% of the people with university degrees are black, of course 80% of the top managers are going to be black in time. So I think this is something that BEE shouldn't be credited for. And BEE is not going to be the thing that brings about the results in 30, 40 years that it's aiming to bring about. But in the meanwhile, like having BEE for the next 20 years, it's going to take about, by my calculations, I think it was 36 years, and then we'll have equitable representation, quote unquote, at top management level. But in the meanwhile, if you've got these
You're right, but it's going to happen anyway. Simply because
that's going to happen anyway.
So what is this case that the lawyers are that is being brought? Is that going to? Do you think this could achieve anything?
Maybe, Howard. I mean, I haven't fully tracked all of the arguments, but the bits that I did watch, I don't know that it's going so well. So if you look at our court's history, the Constitutional Court has often said, look, guys, you might not like it, and there might be some people who have a tough time, but the Constitution says there is room for affirmative action. And so, you know, if Parliament has said we're going to do it, then we can't disagree with Parliament. It's not really our job to disagree with Parliament unless the Constitution prohibits something, and it doesn't prohibit affirmative action. So, and the arguments that these guys seem to be trying, seem to be repetitions of arguments that have failed before. I think the right kinds of arguments are to say that this is actually going to make things worse for the intended beneficiaries. Saying it's bad for whites, it just that has never worked. Saying that this is actually perversely going to be bad for black law firms by, you know, building the evidence base, saying, look, these are the things, these are the demographics, these are the patterns we've already seen, this is what you could expect without BEE, and then these are the costs that having BEE brings in. Now, 30% of every law firm has to have this many black, every law firm has to have 30% black partners at the top level. This is what that does to the labor market. Like, those arguments haven't been ventilated yet, to my knowledge. And so I've got a little bit of a worry that they're going to lose. But I think that it's important that they are challenging it. These big law firms are challenging it in quite technical and procedural ways. And it does need to be struck down because, I mean, the legal sector codes right now are, here's what they're really going to do in one sentence. The big law firms can afford to hit all of these targets by paying quite a lot more for black people to be filling some particular positions because there's a relative scarcity of black people, so they can do that. So if you're a client, you're going to then have to pay that cost, which means if you need to go to law, if you need to sue someone because they did something bad, try and ruin your life, you need to pay extra to do that. And that in turn means that there are more middle-class people who aren't going to be able to afford a lawyer, which in turn means more things get solved in like suboptimal, unjust ways.
Very interesting.
You know, if you're just, you're the weak guy, you can't afford it. You're the big company, you can afford it.
Right.
It's such a backwards situation.
That is where we do need to leave it. It's really a conversation we're going to be keep having as this plays out. It was Gabriel Krauss, writer and analyst at the Institute of Race Relations.